Hey everybody, like it or not, you are listening to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined tonight, after a long absence, from overseas by Mr. Alex Lawson.
Hi, how are you? It's so great to be back.
Yes, welcome back to the show. You have not been on since the debacle that was October, Horror Movie Month.
Yeah, and I'm first of all, I'm sorry for being away for so long, and second of all, I'm sorry that my return has made us have to mention Horror Movie Month again.
Yeah, I get tired thinking about it.
Yeah, even just in passing, I know it was a much more of a strain on you than it was on me, but I am glad to be back. I could explain my absence, but basically, I mean, I don't want to step on what we're going to be talking about here. But basically I grew up and became a lawyer and I have forgotten how to have fun and talk, about movies on the internet with my friends.
Wow.
I know there's a lot going on. But hopefully we can power through and maybe reach some sort of, heartwarming conclusion or something.
Do you think I should have, in the introduction, do you think I should have said, like, welcome to This Movie, the podcast that will have you hooked?
Oh, no. No? Well, that would sort of shatter that little game you like to play wherein you sort of veil the
right
the movie needlessly, because, you know, you go to such, you know, lengths to put the poster up and put the title of, you know, whatever we're doing. But
what if how about welcome to F This Movie, the podcast that fucks you in the childhood?
Oh, or how about this? That's okay. A good one. The podcast that Steven Spielberg disowns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with good reason, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Once again, you are listening to F This Movie. You can find us online at fthismovie.blogspot.com. You can hear all of our old shows there and read other wacky stuff. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie. You can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Find us through DVD Verdict at dvdverdictpresents.com. Thank you to everybody at DVD Verdict for hosting our show. And am I missing any?
The improving by the day Twitter feed.
Yes, yes, that's right. That is,
I mean, I don't know who you put in charge of that thing, but it's
not me is the answer. The answer is not me. No, sometimes it's me. Yeah, that's right. Twitter.com/fthismovie. And I'm glad you brought that up because I believe the Oscars are this Sunday, which
they are.
What's that date? February
27th. I believe.
Thank you. And I think we're going to be live tweeting the Oscars. Myself and Doug and Erica and JB are all going to be together watching the Oscars, and I think we're going to be shitting on stuff over Twitter on the Oscars.
That sounds fantastic. Although I can tell you almost just sort of you're warming to this whole Twitter thing, because about, you know, a month or so ago, you would have like thrown up in your mouth a little bit even saying the phrase live tweeting.
Oh yeah, no, I hate it. This was not my idea.
Oh, okay. So you haven't warmed to it at all, is what you're saying?
It's not that I haven't warmed to it. It's just it's a little bit out of my wheelhouse. And yeah, live tweeting is not something I want in the vernacular. But
yeah, well, just lay back and deal with it.
Anyway, if you want to hear us make fun of stuff at the Oscars, which we've done every year in the past, but we've just never bothered to put it online.
Of course.
You usually have to be sitting in the living room with us. Go to twitter.com/fthismovie and follow us on Oscar night. Alex, have you seen anything good lately? And of course, by lately, I mean since October.
Since October, I've seen a lot of things. Yeah. I haven't seen, only until recently, I haven't seen too many new things because I was very good about seeing all of the, you know, sort of Oscar contending type of pictures. I got like, I really committed to it this year and was able to see a lot of them in the theater.
Yeah.
And now, of course, the things that are out now that are new aren't really worth seeing.
Those, no, they're going to be up for Oscars next year. Just have to wait until it cycles through. Green Hornet is going to be nominated for Best Picture. The Mechanic, Best Picture.
I can't even think of any movies to joke about because they're all so bad and forgettable. I don't even know, like, I don't even know what's going on.
Just go with it?
Just go. Oh, yeah, of course.
I am number four?
See, this is why you're the host. I've actually watched a couple of really cool documentaries, which, yeah, no, hey, no, but listen, it's relevant because they're about movies.
Oh,
I know.
Just I'm back in.
Wrap your head around that concept. First of all, is this this is just a series. It's one long fan documentary about Star Wars. It's three parts, obviously, but it's broken up into several different segments on YouTube. And the first one is called, I believe it's just called Star Wars Begins, not the most clever title ever. Mm-hmm. But it's a fascinatingly thorough, just compiling of things that you did not know about Star Wars, which is alarming considering how popular it is and how much people commit to knowing just the most, you know, innate little minutia about it.
Right.
But even beyond that, like a documentary about Star Wars, that sounds interesting, is the way it's presented. You basically watch the movie from start to finish, but every once in a while some audio will come in from an interview that you probably haven't heard before, and you'll also see like alternate takes, like alternate angles, and like you know, footage from the set that I've never seen before. I don't know how it didn't see the light of day until now. But if you go on YouTube and just search Star Wars Begins, just start at part one, and hopefully you've cleared out your day. If I consider it a must view, deal for any Star Wars fan of any level. I would highly recommend it.
That's pretty cool. I don't love the idea of having to watch it in 10-minute increments, but
yeah, no, I mean it's really not ideal. That's what I'm saying. I mean, you would really have to sort of block out some time. Right. But it is definitely worth a watch. I actually put a link of it on Mike Pomero's wall shortly after I listened to your Phantom Menace podcast, because mm-hmm, I know he's mm-hmm. I actually corresponded with him briefly about it, and he said he loved it. So it passes the mic test.
Okay.
If for what that's worth as far as Star Wars goes. And then the other thing was the documentary that comes with the Social Network DVD.
I have not watched that yet.
And essentially, I'm talking about, I saw a special feature, but this is like, right. It's like a 90 minute documentary. I think it's just entitled "How Did They Make a Movie of Facebook," which is an awful title.
They should have called it "Facebook Begins."
Yeah, sure. but it's again, I really like The Social Network, and like a lot of people did this year, but. This really sort of puts you into the creative process of the movie in a way that a lot of other, most making of documentaries are just sort of fluffy, forgettable things that come with the DVD, I'm saying. But this is just really interesting, and it's great to see all the actors at the table reading with Aaron Sorkin and David Fincher, and the way that like you can sense tension from time to time. And again, usually these things are edited in such a way that it makes it look like making the movie was just sort of a harmonious, laughy process. But like, there's really some interesting creative, like, I wouldn't say battles, like, cause like nobody was, you know, getting like really fired up or anything with like a David O. Russell situation. But it was really fascinating. And I would suggest everybody watch it. Even if you don't own the Social Network DVD, it's also on IMDb. If you go to the Social Network's IMDb page, it's on there.
You can watch the whole documentary?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh wow.
It's even if you didn't want to pony up the dough to buy the Social Network.
If you're crazy.
Yeah. And then, okay, the last thing, the last new thing I did see today, I went and saw Cedar Rapids.
Okay, I saw that as well.
Yeah, good. I saw it just hours ago at this theater in DC, and I really liked it. I thought it was it was sort of like and tell me if you agree. I mean, I felt like it was sort of like, I don't know, I don't want to say tenuous, but it seems sort of incomplete and sort of like underdeveloped as an idea. But I mean, it was obviously really fun. I mean, there's a lot of really talented people in it, particularly John C. Reilly, who, I mean, he's probably doing just sort of a tamed down version of his Steve Brule character. I mean, hell, if I'm going to decry him for such a thing, I thought it was really good. What did you think?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I was surprised, actually, because I went into it expecting to, you know, think it was okay just because of the people involved. but I thought it was a lot. It wasn't like, I didn't think it was hysterically funny, but I thought it was a lot smarter and a lot more subtle than I expected it to be. And I wasn't crazy about the Ed Helms. I like Ed Helms, but I wasn't crazy about his character, and his performance was, I think, the broadest thing in the movie.
Yeah, definitely.
But I thought all of his friends, the Anne Heche and John C. Reilly and the Clay Davis from The Wire. I thought they were all really interesting and sort of like fully realized human beings. I think it would have been so easy for John C. Reilly just to be the like blowhard douche. But he wasn't, and I thought there was so much more going on in the movie than I thought there was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they sort of, you know, without it being too heavy-handed, like, folded in a little parable of, like, you know, morality and business and stuff like that, and it didn't come off too heavy-handed,
right?
Which I really liked. The one thing I sort of took issue with, and I sort of bristled at this even in the trailer, was sort of the overt references to The Wire.
I still contend, Erica argues with, we don't really argue, but she thinks they're funny. She laughs in the trailer and she laughed in the movie. And I'm with you. I don't think they work at all.
And to what end? I mean, like, did you just cast the guy just for the express purpose of making that joke? Because like you said, he has other funny moments too that aren't related to that. And I don't, it just doesn't need it, is what it comes down to, in my opinion.
I agree. I think, you know, it's like, it works. If you haven't seen it, then it's just funny because he's this nerdy guy pretending to be gangster. Yeah. But if you have seen it, then it's supposed to be. If you have watched The Wire, then it's like, oh, this little in-joke. But either way, I think it's unnecessary.
Yeah.
I was so happy, though, to see there's a scene in the trailer, and I've seen the trailer a bunch of times, where John C. Reilly and Ed Helms are, through a series of events, mostly naked in a hotel room having this conversation, and John C. Reilly's like holding his chest, and it looks like there's something sexual going on. And in the trailer, Clay Davis walks in and says, "I don't even want to know." And I hate it.
And so did I. And it wasn't in there.
Not in the movie. He just gives this little look and then goes about his business. And I was like, yes, that's what a human being would do. It was so much better than.
There's actually another moment, and I thought you were going to be talking about this. There's another moment like that from the trailer that did not make it in the movie for the better of the movie, is when he's and this actually reminds me of something that you and Doug talked about on the Anchorman podcast way back when. Way back to the infancy of F this movie. but bear with me here. When they're like messing around in the pool and he's got that R2-D2 helmet on, or the thinks he looks like R2-D2 or whatever, and he does the beep beep sound, which was fucking hysterical in the trailer and in the movie. In the trailer, Ed Helms says something like, "That's not what he sounds like." It was weird because like that's sort of the joke, is he's just making beep noises, and it reminded me of that moment in Anchorman when Paul Rudd is doing the 60% of the time it works every time.
Right, then
he says that doesn't make sense. Right. And you guys talked about how like that sort of torpedoes the joke, sort of the same thing. And it, again, wasn't in the movie. I don't know. I mean, I doubt. I mean, like, not like those things were like testing well or something. I mean, I don't know. I'm glad they thought better of those things, I guess.
So yeah, I liked that movie. I was surprised. And
have you seen anything else, or?
I've been rewatching some older stuff, but the other thing I guess that I've seen that is newer and that would be of interest to you is I saw your pick for the best movie of 2010.
Ah, yes.
Which is Never Let Me Go.
Uh-huh.
Or as I call it, Merchant Ivory's take on The Island.
Oh, come on.
I'm just kidding. I really like the movie.
I was watching
and I was like, this is The Island. This is the same movie.
I never even realized. I mean, The Island was so forgettable, but I guess, yeah, that is kind of what happens in The Island, isn't it? Yeah, they just sort of grow people, don't they? You did enjoy it, though.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I did a review of it for DVD Verdict.
Oh, I'll have to read that.
Yeah, in the review, I kind of talk about my main problem with the movie. And again, I really liked the movie. I felt like it was missing the entire middle act. I thought it was kind of a first act and a last act, but it was missing the middle, and I think without it, the last act suffers a little bit.
Do you mean, when you say it was missing the middle act, do you mean like you wanted more of the story told, or do you feel like the middle part you got wasn't good or something.
I think it needed to tell more of the story.
Oh, okay.
I think there's a lot of stuff that happens in the lives of these three characters that needed to be seen for the last part, the last section to sort of have more resonance, if that makes sense. I'm trying not to give anything away, but
yeah, no, yeah, for sure, for sure. I mean, I would disagree. I mean, I think the acting is so strong that it's communicated very well. Just between the three of them, I think they all give really good performances. Even Keira Knightley, who I had all but written off as a movie star. I mean,
Domino.
Yeah, no.
Hello.
Hey, by the way, how long can she get away with playing 18-year-olds? I mean, this is really getting out of hand. But like, it worked. I mean, I didn't like not buy it. I was like, yeah, she still looks kind of young. I guess it works.
Yeah.
But the thing that I really, really dug about it was the way, and I sort of referenced this briefly in the little like blurb that I wrote on the website. Now, I haven't read the book. It's based on what I'm told is a very good and very popular book. I own it now, and I'm going to read it. And actually, I was reminded of something that you and Erica talked about last week on the Romantic Comedies podcast about how people don't like educate themselves.
Yeah.
And that's very true. And normally I do, but I knew nothing about Never Let Me Go. All I knew about it is that Andrew Garfield was in it. That's all I knew. Someone said the guy who's playing the new Spider-Man is in this movie. And the guy who, you know, would the Social Network wasn't out yet when I saw it. But mm-hmm. I mean, you know. So I knew nothing at all. And what I took away from it was I was just in awe of like how they sort of let you figure out exactly what the nature of their circumstance is. And again, I won't give it away, but I mean, they never come out and tell you like these people are blank and they're doing this for this reason, you know?
They sort of do, don't they? I mean,
no, but
what's her name has that scene, Happy Go Lucky. I'm blanking on her name, but she's got the teacher has right. that scene where she basically lays out, you're this, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. But even then, I mean, it's not, well, we probably shouldn't continue with this because there's really no way to not spoil this. But I mean, but even at that point, it's not like it's still not. It wasn't clear to me, at least anyway. Maybe I'm just a little thick or something. Like I, exactly what the nature of it was. Like I thought it was weird that she would say that, but I thought she was like being, I don't know, like hyperbolic with them or something. Or, but. Basically, I didn't know.
Again, without being specific, I can't ask. How does one be hyperbolic in saying the things that she says to them?
But this is probably the least interesting conversation anyway, that we will ever have on the podcast.
I liked. We've had some bad ones. I liked Never Let Me Go a lot. Apparently, not as much as you.
No, and a lot of people didn't. Like I said, I mean, it wasn't on a lot of lists, you know, and I fully understand that. But
it's still it's still your favorite movie of the last year.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I've watched it a couple times since, and it hits me as hard every time. Everyone should see it if you haven't. So,
speaking of movies that hit me just as hard every time, let's talk about Hook.
Oh, Jesus. Do we have to? Really? yikes. We're about, what, 20 minutes in here?
Sure. I have no idea.
I was hoping we would set a record and not actually talk about it.
Nice.
We would,
like in the last 5 minutes, be like, fuck Hook. All right. Bye, everyone.
Sorry. Yeah, but we can talk about it.
Okay.
I don't know where you want to start.
All right. I think I'm going to start with like in 1991 when this movie came out. I guess I would have been like 14 years old. And okay. I liked, you know, I loved movies growing up my whole life. Around that age is when I first started sort of paying attention to like things like box office and like where movies kind of stood. It was always just like, I like this movie or I don't like this movie. But then I started paying attention to the world around the movie, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And so when Hook was coming out, I was positive that Hook was going to be the most successful movie of all time.
Yeah, of course.
Because it was Steven Spielberg, it was Robin Williams, it was Dustin Hoffman, it was Julia Roberts coming off of Pretty Woman. And again,
yeah.
As I've said on the Romantic Comedy podcast, I loved Pretty Woman. So I was like, well, she's a huge star. This is going to be huge. I thought It was Peter Pan, so it appeals to everyone. And I thought at the time, and I don't know that I'm still as convinced of this, that it was a really clever idea for a movie, that it was an interesting take on Peter Pan. And I was positive it was going to be just huge. It was going to be the biggest thing ever. And I was incorrect. because while the movie still made a boatload of money, I mean, it made like $300 million worldwide. It was not particularly well received even by audiences, including myself at age 14. I saw it and it came out around Christmas and I was so excited. I was like, oh, this is going to be a great Christmas movie. And instead it was a bit of a, to quote a show tune, a hard candy Christmas. Because at 14, I was like, I don't think I liked that. And at 33, I fucking hate that movie.
Yeah, I have it's weird. You stole my thunder a little bit with your story.
In your story, you aren't born yet.
Yeah, no. I mean, I was born. I know.
I'm just kidding.
I was about 6 when it came out, but I don't remember. We were actually probably about. You said you were about 14 when you saw it. I was about 12 when I actually got around to like seeing it.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, and this is the story that I always tell people with Hook, and it's sort of like what you were saying, but it was even an even more dramatic moment for me because, and again, this is what I always tell people who sort of leap to defend it, and there are a lot of them, particularly in my age bracket. We can talk about that in a second. But
yeah, I'm sorry. That's the fucking Goonies phenomenon, right? I saw this when I was seven, and so I still think it's good.
Absolutely, it is. But wait, though, because what I'm trying to tell you is that I saw it when I was maybe 11 or 12, and as the way I tell people is this. When you're a kid, you like everything you see because it's a movie.
Right.
And because it represents a world you don't live in. And if it's even a little bit fun, you will eat it up because you're a kid and you don't really have, you haven't developed taste and you have no filter. It's just, it's a movie and it's streaming in front of you. Maybe you like more movies than others. You know, maybe you're one of those kids who like put on Aladdin like on a loop or whatever, you know, insert Disney movie, whatever. But I recall it. This was the first time I didn't see it in the theater, obviously, because it was 6 years after it came out or so. But like, I remember sitting down and being excited to watch it. And then just like you said, as soon as it was over, I'm like, wait a minute. That wasn't fun. What am I missing? Because and again, all of my friends had told me and continue to tell me, that it's just so much fun and like this staple of their childhood and by proxy my childhood because they're my peers or whatever. But yeah, I don't know if I'm, I mean, I guess it's, I mean, I'm a, you know, a little bit younger than you. I mean, I guess it is my generation's advent of the Goonies phenomenon. Hmm. I mean, I because again, I watched it again today and I thought, well, maybe I'm missing something. You know, we've talked in the past about revisiting things and noticing things different. Same deal. My criticisms aren't even terribly eloquent, outside of just at no point am I having fun. Like,
no.
there's so much about it that doesn't work. It's,
There's not one thing that works. There's
not one
good thing about this fucking movie. My memory of it was like, I didn't really like it. It's problematic, but I was sort of indifferent towards it. And watching it again today, man, I with every fiber of my being, I was reacting against this movie. So angry. This movie, I don't understand how anyone could say, like, it's fun. It's fun because this movie to me represents the death.
It's the death of fun.
Of fun.
Yes. I
mean, that's practically what it's about. Like from the very get-go. And that's why I say maybe it's not that clever of a conceit for a movie, because while I'm interested in this idea that like, oh, Peter Pan grows up and forgets who he is and he has to go back to Neverland, fight Captain Hook as an adult.
Yeah.
Okay, great. But A, that shits in the face of Peter Pan because
yeah.
it's all about not growing up. But B, to make matters worse, it's so much of this bullshit that started in the 80s and really carried through the 90s and even the 2000s. And that is, not only did Peter Pan grow up, but he turned into this like shitty workaholic sellout, this yuppie fucker. And every like kids slash family movie, even still to this day, I feel like fucking depends so heavily on this idea of like the distant dad who works too much and doesn't have time for his kids. And then eventually, you know,
he comes around
and decides, you know, I want to be with my kids instead of my job. I mean, it's so fucking damaging. I think the message that sends to all these families, it's like, I'm not saying, you know, parents need to fucking work nonstop. But like you can do both. Like you can be successful and work a lot and still be a really good dad who's there for your kids, or a really good mom who's there for your kids. But movies, man, you gotta fucking have it one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And just to see the Peter Pan story, which I don't even necessarily have tremendous affection for, whatever, I like Peter Pan as much as anybody, but maybe it's nothing that I hold, you know, super dear to me. But to see it just shit on in this like cynical way bummed me out. I've never been more aware of a movie as a package. Do you know what I mean? Like,
what do you mean? As a package? Just like having all the elements thrown into
There is no one has a story they want to tell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All they have is a package of elements. They have the right stars in place, and they have this A-list director, and they have a high concept, and they have a shitload of money on set design and production design, and we have all these dumb little cameos from Glenn Close and David Crosby and Phil Collins, and we have the score from John Williams, and it's based on this property that everyone knows and loves, and it's this package that you can sell like a motherfucker, but it's utterly hollow.
Yeah. I hollow is a good word. I think I understand like why you and other people might think that it's like a good idea, because one thing you have to say is that it at least is better than just rolling off another remake of something, right?
Sure.
I mean, it is sort of an attempt to tell a story in a different way, but nothing about it works for me in a way that it just works on so many levels for so many other people of my same age.
I have no idea what the fuck those people are talking about.
I don't. That's the thing. I mean, I feel like there's maybe some alternate cut that I haven't seen, one that is completely the opposite or something.
There are plenty of movies that I don't like, and some will say I really like that movie, and I'll say like, well, it's not for me, but I get what you're responding to.
Yeah.
But I have no idea what the fuck anyone is responding to in Hook, except for what the movie wants you to respond to, which is just this shallow pretend display of joy. It's like, let's all wave our arms busily and look like we're having fun and manufacture joy through music and contrived moments. But at no point is there any genuine fun going on in the movie.
No, I agree. Now, those are the basic – those are the overarching complaints we have. Let's talk. I want to talk specifics, though, because if we're both in agreement that we just didn't have fun, I would like to talk about a couple of different moments, which are the apexes of not having fun in this movie. My thing, and again, and this is something that struck me when I saw it the first time, really riled me up this time. And again, I'm just going to get really, really specific because I don't know how else to do this other than to just start picking out things that really piss me off more than others, because everything pissed me off. When he gets to Neverland and they are exhausting the gag of he is old and he is not a lost boy anymore.
Yeah, could there be more references early on to like Peter Pan? Jesus. Oh, I'm afraid to fly. And
I know
the little latch on the thing. I mean, there's just all the get it. It's Peter Pan, but it's not. Ha ha ha.
Yeah. And then when he gets there, I feel like, first of all, the movie is a lot fucking longer than I remember. It's like 2 hours and 20 minutes long. I mean,
it's like 2.5 hours long.
Fucking crazy. Yes. That's one thing. And a great percentage of that time when he first gets there is just like, I feel like it's just the same beat after beat after beat of him being just being overwhelmed by all these goddamn kids. And he doesn't know, like, I feel like that joke goes on for like a half an hour. And then it all crests with that awful, awful decision. I don't know. It's when the skateboards come out is what I'm trying to tell you. Yeah, I mean, that's we've talked about this before. Just, I mean, because they're like punk kids and, you know, in theory, in like human years, they're like, what, like 200 years old or something. But, you know, someone gave them skateboards at some point. And God, and they just they are infusing the skateboarding and the basketball. And he doesn't know how to handle with any how to handle any of that. And I mean, it's really, really, really bothers me. I hate that, like, that's, and again, it's sort of like what you were saying. It's just like all these parts thrown in. It's like, well, we need to do some, we need to have the Lost Boys in the movie. Let's give them a thing. Let's give them prepare the laugh track. Let's give them a hook.
Right.
It
was Steven Spielberg or some writer sitting down and saying, how can we reimagine, you know, the Lost Boys for 1990? And this is what they come up with. And in a movie that's just filled with terrible, terrible stuff, nothing is worse than...
That is the worst thing.
Than the Lost Boys, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's the worst thing.
In particular, the leader of the Lost Boys, Truccio...
Oh. Rufio,
a Mohawked, I believe Filipino kid, yeah, who represents everything that again is horrible about this movie. What an ugly movie too. I mean, it's so.
I was gonna talk about that because you mentioned the set design. They look like they're on like the set of like some like Vegas show in front of a hotel or something.
It's awful.
It's fucking weird looking, right?
But it's utterly misconceived because it's obvious that a ton of money went into it, a ton of work building these huge practical sets, tremendous production design, and all of it is bad. Like, it's all just wooden and ugly and spray painted. It's such an ugly, ugly, dire movie. Again, that is supposed to be about having fun and reconnecting with your inner child. The movie, I mean, you can really tell again, and I know that some of this for a fact, that it was touched by the hands of many, many writers.
Yes. Yeah.
The script was in development for a long time.
Well, the first was J.M. Barrie, as we know.
Right.
But yes, that was a silly joke. But yeah, I mean, it got shuffled around to a lot of different people, and that's almost always.
And then even as new cast members were hired on, those cast members were hiring out their own writers to rewrite their scenes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so Dustin Hoffman hires on his own writer to beef up the Captain Hook part.
Oh my God.
And Carrie Fisher is brought on to do an uncredited rewrite for the Tinkerbell stuff, which we will fucking get to. And it's like, and the movie doesn't make any sense from one scene to the next. It's this crazy mixture of tones and bad ideas. By the time Peter Banning finally, you know, 2 hours into the movie, gets in touch with his inner child and remembers that he is Peter Pan, he becomes a different guy. He becomes like this, he becomes Mork from Ork. Like, he's this crazy man-child.
Yeah, the man-child
He's
syndrome.
This frantic thing. And then guess what? That lasts for, I don't know, one scene?
Yeah, that's the thing.
And then he's back to being Peter Banning. The movie never pays any attention to what came before or what's happening next. It's entirely existing in the moment.
Not to mention, that's all true. Not to mention this whole, and this is sort of a conceit of the Peter Pan story told this way, and particularly so when you cast Robin Williams. We have, about all the things that don't work, we haven't mentioned that, at least to me this time, it just comes off as kind of creepy. Like, it's weird to see him in that fucking costume playing with all those kids. Like, it's weird to me. And I'm like, I understand that's the point, is that he becomes like a child. But like, they put that weird, he's got that weird like eye makeup on when he becomes youthful and stuff.
Yeah, hairspray all of a sudden.
His hair is feathered up. It's fucking horrendous. It's just like, nope. It's the death of fun. And before we continue on with all the awful, all the things that are awful, I have to say, on this viewing, I did smile once at something, and not because it was particularly like enjoying myself, but because I just didn't. I saw something that I hadn't before, and maybe it's because I haven't watched it in many, many years, right? And I just didn't know this. Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
In the movie, yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah.
And that at least. That was the one that was the lone enjoyment, like the lone moment of enjoyment I had, because I didn't know she was in the movie.
Seeing Gwyneth Paltrow brought you that much enjoyment?
Just because I didn't know this famous movie star was in the movie. Like, I'm not saying like she's so. I'm like, that was the one time where I went, oh, look at that, and I pointed at the screen for like, you know, what, she's in it for like what, 20 seconds or something.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, I got us a little off kilter there, but because what was I gonna say? I don't know.
Okay. So Dustin Hoffman is playing Captain Hook, and the movie is called Hook. Not for any reason, except not to really. Like remind you that it's sort of this postmodern take on Peter Pan. But it's not even that. It's not even like Peter Pan as seen through the eyes of Captain Hook, which might be more interesting. It's just this idiotic sequel of sorts to Peter Pan that ends up just retelling Peter Pan. It's not even like. It doesn't add anything new to the story in any real sense. It's just like he can't remember that he's Peter Pan, and then he remembers that he's Peter Pan, and then he's Peter Pan, and it's like, oh, great, I mean, okay.
They called Wicked Wicked because, forgive me for, you know, I mean.
This is like the second, musical theater reference this podcast, so I don't know what's going on.
This is really going it, but like, I mean, they called it Wicked because, you know, okay, you're gonna tell the Wizard of Oz from the Wicked Witch of the West perspective,
right?
Whatever, I don't know, but at least they're committed to that idea. Say what you want about Wicked, I haven't seen it, but I know that that's what it's about. But yeah, I mean, and since you mentioned Dustin Hoffman, the guy's practically, you know. I don't want to say like a living legend or something. He's a really well-respected icon almost, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, he's just doing all the wrong thing. Like it's a disaster show. Like
Well, that's where I was going with that is that like, if nothing else, the guy playing Captain Hook, even in a movie as shitty as this, I think there's room for the guy playing Captain Hook to distinguish himself and to look like he's having fun and to kind of run away with the movie. Like, boy, that thing is a disaster. But at the center of it is this great, crazy performance by the guy playing Captain Hook. But instead, again, it's just dour and miserable. And I wouldn't say he underplays everything, but there's no joy in his performance at all. He doesn't seem to be having any fun in the part. You're playing fucking Captain Hook. Like, the cartoon was way more entertaining than you. Oh.
Yeah.
And then we get to Tinkerbell.
Yeah, go ahead.
And again, it's one of these things because there is no need to even really have Tinkerbell in the movie. I mean, of course, you need her in the movie because she's part of the Peter Pan story, but essentially you could just have this little thing of light flying around that he talks to. But of course, it has to be a movie star part because that's part of our package. And what A-list actress can we get to play this thankless, unnecessary role? How about Julia Roberts, who adds nothing to the role and is given these scenes that just stop the movie cold so that we can have a few minutes with Julia Roberts and... She is at one point she's made big and she's dressed in this glamorous dress, apparently just because she had a clause in her contract. Like, I don't want to wear the ugly wig and Tinkerbell ears for the entire movie. At some point, I have to be my regular size and look.
I have to be the pretty woman.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole subplot how she's in love with Peter Pan. What the fuck does that add to the movie? Wouldn't it be great if we somehow found out that Tinkerbell is really in love with Peter Pan? Wouldn't that make the story better?
It's horrendous. I mean, like, I disagree with you a little bit in that, like, I guess it's sort of a cool idea to have her be a person rather than just a thing of light. Cause I get that somebody, if you're going to do this ridiculous thing, I guess somebody has to like guide him through what he has to do. I understand that, but I mean, but that doesn't make any of the things that they give her to do or say forgivable at all.
And it certainly didn't need to be Julia Roberts.
No, without question. Could it? Right. Yeah. But Yeah, and this goes back to what you were saying about how you feel like it's just a mixture of powerful people sort of dictating what has to happen, because there's no, because there is no other explanation for how a scene like that gets in a movie, where she would just become big, and he just says, and so they can do the give me a kiss, hold out your hand, put it down, it's a callback and all that shit. It's ham-fisted and it's hacky and it's terrible.
And again, even the cameos from like David Crosby and Glenn Close, they sort of smack of like, we're all famous and let's get in on this thing. Hey, famous people, come jump in our movie. We're making an event that's going to matter for the rest of time. And it's masturbatory and it's misguided. And it's fascinating to watch, because now is maybe when we should start talking about Steven Spielberg, because we've gone for most of the podcast at ripping on Hook, but never really blaming the man responsible. A few weeks ago, I did a list on fthismovie.blogspot.com about bad movies from good directors. And I named The Lost World, Jurassic Park, as Steven Spielberg's worst movie. And I might still believe that, because I really hate that movie.
Yeah, I know you do. And I don't really. We can talk about that on a different podcast, I guess.
That
But
movie is
continue.
hateful and horrible.
Okay.
And I said, like, oh, you could pick Hook, but I'm going with Lost World Jurassic Park because it's just so mean-spirited. But watching Hook again today, I was like, wow, this is so terrible. And there is no evidence that Steven Spielberg is involved. But by that, I mean it looks like someone trying to approximate Steven Spielberg. It's Spielberg trying to approximate himself.
Yeah, like the sense that I got is that, I mean, and again, let's be clear. I mean, it's early 90s Spielberg, and he is like cresting with the, family-friendly hits, I mean, where it's you have to hit all those beats. And it hits like 80 of those beats to the point that you feel beaten down by the beats. You know what I mean? Like, and it's
Yeah.
in an awful way. Because I don't know. I mean, like, that's a really interesting way to put it, that you feel like he's approximating himself,
Well, just
because
watching it and hearing like the John Williams score, which is just so oppressive, and again, trying to convince you that what you're watching is joyful, but without ever actually doing so. Watching it today, I was like, if you told me this was directed by it, like Chris Columbus, I would absolutely believe you. That's who it seems like made this movie. But Spielberg, and again, the movie should sort of be a home run for him, because it's entirely about getting in touch with your inner child, and
Yeah, and
no
that's what.
director is more in love with the theme of getting in touch with your inner child than Spielberg. But now he himself hates the movie, right?
That's my understanding. I probably should have Googled something in preparation.
The
But again,
story I heard is that he cried at the premiere, like he was in tears and said, "I blew it," or something like that.
I mean, there's probably some truth to that. I don't think he would have cried at the premiere, maybe in the
Yeah,
editing or
maybe not at
something.
the
You know what I
premiere.
mean? But I mean, and again, well, someone probably should have read something about this. I'm a little rusty. I haven't done this in several months. I don't know what your excuse is. But anyway, I mean, do we feel like, I mean, he's Steven Spielberg. This isn't like an Alien 3 situation where like David Fincher is like setting out on his own and fighting the studio and not being able to do what he wants with it, and then it gets cut to shit, and what you get is not that. I mean, it's Steven Spielberg. Like, I mean, the guy, I mean, they kiss his ass like all over that town. They still do, and they certainly did at that point.
Well,
And I
and I
just.
think that's part of what's wrong with the movie, is it's one of those situations where no one was saying, "Hey, Steven, maybe we want to think about this. Maybe we
Bad
want
idea,
to
yeah.
do another pass on the script. Maybe I came to visit the set and it's really ugly. It's just $100 million worth of wood, and what are you doing?" No one said
Yeah.
that, because he's fucking Steven Spielberg. He knows what he's doing.
I mean, Yeah, I mean that's true, but I mean, how else do you explain? Like, how? I mean, you know, how long does it take to make a movie? I mean, like, if he was, you know, if he was invested in this process, start to finish, for I don't know, let's say a year and a half or 2 years or something, from initial idea to final cut, whatever.
Oh no, it went on for like 10 years.
Oh no, shit.
Yeah, he was originally just going to do a straightforward version of Peter Pan, and then he walked away from that, and then that sort of slowly morphed into Hook, and then he was going to do that, but then I think his wife got pregnant, or they had a kid, or I don't know. He walked away from that. You could write an entire book about fucking movies that like were greenlit and ready to go, and then Spielberg walked. He is notorious for doing that. So they had another director on, and then Robin Williams and Dustin Hoffman were not getting along with him, and they basically got him fired, and Spielberg came back on. But it wasn't like he walked onto a movie that wasn't his. I mean, it had sort of started with him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And if it went on for as long as you're saying, and I didn't know all that stuff, but I mean, at that point, like, how do you continue to make so many bad decisions over such a long period of time, culminating with this awful movie, when you're like a legend in the making of, you know, right. Hollywood. Like, right. That's the thing. I mean, like, if you're saying it was this like drawn out thing, I mean, it's hard to write it off as just like, oh, well, everybody has a bad one, or, I mean, and he's had some bad ones or whatever, but I mean, it's just a prolonged process.
Right. But again, and I think it's just one of those situations where,
It was a great idea all the way, or
I guess. I mean, again, the buck stops with him, and he should have known what bad shape it was in. But like, you can almost tell that it went through all these different iterations and different drafts and different writers as you watch it, because there's just no consistency to the movie at all.
No.
And it just feels like all these different ideas, and it's this whole thing that's done by committee, you know. And I like a lot of Spielberg movies. I don't necessarily swear like he's the greatest director, but I like a lot of his movies. Some I really like a lot, but his bad movies are really, really bad, and there's not that many of them. You know, Lost World I would put on that list, and Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull I would put on that list.
Yeah, and
and maybe I chalk those up to just being sequels that, you know, he shouldn't have necessarily made, and that his heart wasn't in them. But Hook is one of the few sort of original out of the gate movies that, even though it is a sequel, it's not a sequel to a Spielberg movie, that that he just completely fucked up, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of a weird, I mean, I don't know if it's like a perfect storm of awful, like a guy who, like you said, had like too much power and people don't want to say no to the adding to that an awful idea anyway that probably no real director could have worked, much less Steven fucking Spielberg. Adding to that, you know, this weird, what sounds like sort of a weird studio power play of getting all these famous people involved, and there's egos that go along with that and things like that.
It's just a case of everything sort of spiraling out of control. You know, a director with too much power, too big of stars with too big of egos, a script that was a mess and had been touched by too many hands, a studio that kept throwing money at the production. The movie went way over budget. It went way over schedule. You know, it was just sort of this mess. And the fact that it still made a bunch of money is the only thing I think that keeps it from being remembered as just a complete fucking fiasco of, like, you know, Ishtar Waterworld proportions or whatever, you know.
Sure.
Because it's considerably worse than either of those two movies.
Yeah, no, I agree. I haven't seen Ishtar, but I mean, I actually sort of, I'm a person who derives a sort of weird pleasure out of Waterworld. Go ahead.
I can't defend it, but like once a year I'm like, I gotta watch Waterworld.
Yeah, well, I mean, if we're talking about big budget things that spiraled out of control due to a number of factors, Hook falls into that category, and Waterworld certainly falls into that category. But when you watch Waterworld, the thing that you're watching, no matter how much of a mess it is, I mean, it is interesting to watch. It's an interesting idea, and it's sort of like, I don't know, I can't believe I'm like sort of defending Waterworld here on the internet. Hopefully people have turned off the podcast by now.
No, I'm with you. Waterworld is not nearly as bad as its reputation.
But Yeah, I mean, it's not, and even more than being not as bad as it has become known to be, it's at least an interesting mess. I mean, that's a term you've used on the podcast before a bunch of times.
Yeah.
It at least sort of, I'm compelled to watch the next scene based on what happened in the scene before. This is simple. This is pretty simple storytelling, right? So, I mean, you know, I have none of that with Hook. I mean, I watched it because I knew we were going to talk about it, but it's not anything I ever intend on visiting again. And again, I go back to like, people, I'm 25, and there are, I mean, there's this generation of people around my age and like a couple years older, a couple years younger. This is like a staple. And like, I know people who just like chant Rufio, like just cause that's something that they know. And it's just something that they like recognize. And they thought that that was like a fun part of the movie. Rufio fucking sucks. It's not an interesting character. It's not a cool idea. He doesn't look cool. He doesn't like, it's that nothing works.
No, he's
and
horrible.
I don't know. Yeah. Go
and
ahead.
The movie keeps trying to walk this line. It's trying to be for everyone, and so it's a kid's movie, but no, it's for adults. But it's a kid's movie. Oh, but here's this joke for adults. And that really culminates,
yeah,
I think...
there's a lot of that going on. All the lawyer jokes.
Exactly.
I mean,
kids love lawyer jokes. It just cracks them up. And then there's that scene where they're name-calling each other, where Rufio and Robin Williams are calling... And everything Robin Williams says is vaguely dirty and
an awful role model for these kids and all this. And
well, that part's not dirty. It's when he starts getting into like the sort of potty talk.
Then, well, I mean, Rufio's are also like that. You know,
his are like nonsense.
Are they? Well, I don't know. I mean, we're
yeah, really, right.
I don't know what we're dissecting here, but
to Robin Williams say, like when I was listening to Rufio, it was like, those are a bunch of nonsense words, booger, breath, blah, blah, blah. Like, and it's like, that's something a kid would say. When Robin Williams starts in, it's like, oh, he's clearly trying to make the adults laugh. And so there's a lot of that through the movie. And then we get to the end. Spoilers for Hook coming up. here's the spoiler. Hook is a giant piece of shit. No, Rufio fucking dies in the battle because A, this movie has to end with a battle, and B, Rufio has to die. What purpose does that serve at all in the movie except for, you know?
No, I was gonna say, you know what the purpose is, and you're about to say it. So
no,
just
go ahead. What is the purpose?
No, it's so that because he's like, he was the leader and he's this sort of unbridled youth, he can look up at him and say, I wish I had a dad like you, because that is a moment that the movie has totally earned, right? At that point, are you, oh God, it pissed me off so much.
Well,
like,
there's so much just like weird parental guilt being hurled at the audience, because even the little girl just keeps saying, Captain Hook is a mean man who needs a mommy, and we're all orphans and we just need the love of our parents. Parents, do not fuck your kids up. Look what happens to them. They become crazy hook-handed dictators. it's so bizarre. It's like, I assume that's in there for the adult audiences, not just for that message of like, oh, he just needed a dad. He just needed a dad. But also so that we like, so it's a little bit darker, a little bit edgier than like the standard Peter Pan fare. Like, ooh, people can die in this universe, but like, it doesn't make any sense. And again, it's trying to earn pathos and tears that it hasn't earned. Are any of us upset that like, oh, Rufio died? Shit, that's a shame. Uh-huh.
This is, let me ask you this. I don't know right offhand. This came out in 91. When did Home Alone come out? Did it come out in 90?
Yeah.
One of the more joyless parts of this movie, and that's saying a lot, of course, is like, is that battle scene at the end. When the Lost Boys, when this, I mean, forget it. Like, I'm not going to, like, you know, point out, like, holes in logic in movies, like, where people fly and shit. I'm not going to be that guy. But, I mean, like, you know, it's this group of, like, 10-year-olds who defeat these grown pirates. And, like, whatever, I get it. Like, it's a kid's movie. But, I mean, like, these goofy little, like, gadgets that they have, like the thing that shoots the eggs and the thing that sprays the paint in their faces. It feels so not fun in a way that like Home Alone made it fun. I don't understand how or like why it's different. I mean, Home Alone's like it's the same idea. It's kids getting the better of adults, but it's done in such a ham-fisted way that I
Home Alone in Home Alone, when you get to that sequence at the end, watching the little traps he sets and the little creations that he comes up with, it's all about enjoying this little 10-year-old's ingenuity. Look what he put together in a way that's not believable, but at least we see, well, these are household items. So it's like we're enjoying this little kid's ingenuity. And in Hook, all we're able to enjoy or even register, again, is the work of a props person.
Yeah, yes. Okay, well then, yeah, that's probably
putting together these really busy contraptions, because again, it's Hook, and we just have to keep throwing just money and shit at the screen. It's so busy every second. So they have these really over the top busy little contraptions, and like you said, I mean, I'm annoyed by it, but at the same time, it's fine because I'm watching little kids fight pirates and they're throwing tomatoes.
Yeah, no, it's and that's.
No, yeah. I'm not saying you were wrong to be annoyed by that. I'm saying, like, the movie can't have it both ways. I'm watching little kids throw tomatoes at pirates, and it's like, I'm not enjoying this, but fine. At least this is the universe that it's presenting me with. And then in the next moment, we're stabbing...
Kid dies. Exactly. There's something that does not jive there. And then, seconds later,
we're just back to, like, yay, Peter Pan, fight Captain Hook. And we've all forgotten the corpse of Rufio that's still laying on the ground.
I was hoping they were going to, like, burn him like they did with Darth Vader at the end of Return of the Jedi or something. I mean, if you're going to commit to this ridiculous idea, let's really turn some heads. I don't know. Is there anything else that we can say? I
can't understand. And I don't think there's an answer, because I think even Spielberg doesn't quite understand how he let this movie get so far away from him.
Yeah.
But I just don't get it. If this was a Chris Columbus movie, everything about it would make perfect sense to me. And I would say, well, of course, it's this giant, expensive piece of shit that all these stars are in that makes no sense and that pleases no one. Of course, I get that. But the fact that it's Spielberg adds a level of confusion that I can't reconcile the movie. And again, I don't say that as someone who just loves... How did my boy Spielberg fuck it up? Because he's fucked up several movies.
Right. Yeah. You've been critical before.
Sure. Sticky bombs.
Yeah, definitely. You're like the dick who hates on the third act Saving Private Ryan.
I hate on much more of the third act.
I know.
I just realized, though, that last sequence in Hook... with the kids are fighting the fucking pirates?
Yeah, that reminds me of the sticky bombs.
That's the precursor to the last act of Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, definitely.
Sticky bombs all over again.
Yeah, definitely. In sort of an infantile form. I mean, if you want to replace sticky bombs with chicken egg launcher,
that's right.
Or paint sprayer or whatever the hell. But yeah, you're probably right about that.
Rufio is Mellish, Adam Goldberg, right?
Oh yeah, no shit.
Yeah,
I think we're really breaking new ground here. We're giving much more thought to this than it ever deserved. That's for sure. But yeah, I mean, if anything, it gives me an appreciation for, I guess, how hard it is to make a movie, because it's Steven Spielberg. Like, I mean, you know how talented he is. He's a staple of whatever. And your phrasing was very good. It really just, to quote, got away from him in a way that, like, obviously he didn't set out to make a shitty, opposite of fun film. it's just like, it's little things sort of just get out of hand. You get a little, your eyes get a little too big, and you start building awful sets, and you cast the wrong people, and you have a script get all passed around, and before you know it, you got a big mess on your hands.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of elements that none of them come together.
Yeah.
None. And go ahead.
No, go ahead.
The movie that reminded me of Hook, and was a huge fucking hit, and a lot of people love it, is Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland.
I guess that's a fair comparison in the way that it's sort of a remake, but not a remake, sort of like because she goes back.
Right. It's essentially the same plot that she goes back, but she doesn't remember being Alice, and we have to remind her that she's Alice, and it ends with a big battle scene.
And they make sure to remind you of all the things that should be in an Alice in Wonderland story, much like things that should be in a Peter Pan story. Yeah, I guess that's true.
And it's just a lot of empty production design, you know, with no story or and Johnny Depp as the Mad Hatter filling in for Dustin Hoffman as Hook. Like, here's a performance that should at least transcend the material, but doesn't.
Yeah, doesn't work. It's interesting. I guess we just hit the wall with children's literature. Just stop, Hollywood. Stop it.
Yeah, please stick to young adult literature. I am number 4.
That's going so well.
Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Lightning Thief.
And however many more Twilight movies we have, I don't know. I think we're almost done, right?
There's only 2, yeah. But we're going to get to see see Kristen Stewart have a vampire baby.
Yeah, it's all going to pay off. It's going to be great. Anyway, that was that's probably a good landing spot for us here on this Hook podcast, right?
Vampire baby. I guess my childhood is dead. So thank you, Hook.
Yeah.
And thank you, Alex.
Thank you so much for having me back. It was really good to be back, man. I enjoyed it.
It was. Remember, you can always email us if you disagree and you're like, fuck you, I like Hook. Or if you're like, here's another horrible movie that I want to hear you guys talk about. Please don't do that. But email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to follow the Twitter feed for live Oscar jokes. Because yay, Oscars. I couldn't be less interested.
We'll be live joking. Yeah.
Live joking. There you go. Live joking the Oscars.
That's a lot cooler sounding than live tweeting.
I was going to say live shitting, but...
that's...
Live joking, probably better.
Quite a visual passing through my head. Anyway.
Anyway, I hope you come back soon and don't take such a long time before your next show.
I'll do my very best. Thanks.
Bye, everybody.
Later.
Rufio. Rufio.
Rufio. Rufio. Rufio. Oh!